Wired Jesus Podcast, February 2nd, 2011. Creative Commons licensed.
Initiating startup sequence.
Transmitters? We don't need no stinking transmitters.
Wired Jesus Podcast. Wired Wanderings. Postmodern Code.
Upon me. Well, I don't like your God. Your God scares me.
Well, yeah, but just because God doesn't answer your prayers doesn't mean he doesn't care about you.
Well, then why didn't he give me what I wanted?
Well, God can't just answer every prayer and suddenly give you everything you want. That takes all the living out of life.
What do you mean?
Hello, and welcome to the Wired Jesus Podcast, the wired wanderings of a postmodern pilgrim. I'm your host and fellow traveler, Tom Lieberg, and I'm glad you've come along for our journey together.
Once again, the eyes of the nation have turned here to this tiny village in western Pennsylvania, blah, 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 blah. There is no way that this winter is ever going to end as long as this groundhog keeps seeing his shadow. I don't see any other way out. He's got to be stopped. And I have to stop him.
Well, it's been an interesting couple of weeks. As I write this, looking out at a snowstorm on this Groundhog Day. Oh, I love that movie. I may have to pull that out on DVD. And perhaps a little bit like that movie, sometimes life just seems to lead to some interesting convergences. It all started with the announcement that our local bookstore was closing. Widely known and acclaimed as the best bookstore in the state of Ohio, it was a great place. Called the Stately Raven, it was an old converted church that had big fireplaces, gorgeous reading area, and a great selection of books. After 4 years, the owner was calling it quits before being run out of business by online sales and the shift to digital books. Many people here in town were stunned and talked about their personal sadness and surprise that such a wonderful part of our community was closing. I caught myself saying the same thing. It was a great bookstore. In the 2 years that I've lived here, I went in twice, and I bought one book. I buy online. And by year's end, I'll probably have shifted to an iPad. Now, I own hundreds of books and love wandering libraries and bookstores. I also like listening to pipe organ music. But I don't really seek out bookstores or pipe organs anymore. There was a release of a study, it was just last week or so, that according to this expert, social networking is creating greater social isolation for people. I posted the article on my blog, and it's not the only one that's come out lately. But the article talks about a growing backlash against mobile phones, tech, and social networking. That somehow it's making younger generations inattentive, socially inept, and escapists from the real world. However, in my little attempt at research, I found something very interesting about the critics listed in the article. If their pictures are accurate, then every single one of them is older than I am, which means is the gray end of Gen X. They're all boomers. And that's really no surprise to me. Because what I'm seeing is, I think, what Len Sweet calls the gap between digital natives and digital immigrants. The Googlers and the Gutenbergers, as he calls it. My growing impression is that baby boomers are being left behind and on a number of levels left out of this digital world shift. And as a generation, they don't like it. So folks that once reveled in the marvels of tech, video recorders, 8-tracks, Walkmans, calculators, television, they're now feeling and sounding like their parents complaining about change. Though I would say they're handling it with far less grace. And so you have this bizarre Luddite response to put the brakes on what Gen Xers and millennials are doing digitally in daily and community life. Because they, as boomers, don't get it and don't like it. Now this morning, besides the news of the snowstorm, I saw a video of thousands of people filling the streets in Egypt demanding democratic reforms. President Mubarak has come out of hiding. The army's been deployed. There hasn't been bloodshed, at least nothing like in the levels of Tiananmen Square. There seems to be something of a standoff. But CNN and Fox are largely in agreement with the situation, at least on the big issues, that the dictator is probably going to be ousted. The Suez Canal could be threatened, and if so, it'll drive up oil prices. It's going to create all kinds of problems with relations with Israel and has the potential to change the face of Middle Eastern politics. Our government, you know, there's not much we can do. I mean, the president's catching a lot of flack over it, but I'm not sure there really is a whole lot he can do. But what we have said is that the grievances of the Egyptian people need to be recognized and addressed, and early on, one of our primary demands was that the Egyptian government restore wireless networks and stop blocking social network via the internet. Democratic freedom and freedom of speech is now recognized as being both physical and digital. I find it odd because right at the moment our government is proposing internet IDs for all Americans to track us online for our protection and to be able to shut down and control the internet. While we're doing that, freedom via the net through Facebook and Twitter is really being lifted up as a derivative of life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. So who are these demonstrators in Egypt? While seemingly they are of all ages and even religious backgrounds, both Christian and Muslim, who's driving this? It seems to be the 60% of the Egyptian population that all happen to be under the age of 30. So 60% of the country is 30 and under, and 90% of those folks are unemployed. They also happen to be the bleeding edge and the bulk of Egypt's cell phone and social networking culture. My impression, and those of friends of mine who have lived in Egypt, is that this is not a repeat of the Iranian Revolution, which is not to say the Islamic Brotherhood shouldn't be taken seriously and some of their more threatening aspects. But that this really seems to be a democratic revolution, much like the one that was put down in Iran not too long ago, which was driven by the 30 and younger crowd. The difference this time? Digital freedom and communication that open both minds and culture, and has opened up Egypt to the world in a way Iran is still fighting and trying to control. In my wired wanderings, I'm reminded that in the church world in which I spend most of my life, there is this great fear that the church is either selling out to the culture and adopting its values, or the church must be its own ghettoized subculture that's kept pure from worldly pollution. In looking around right now, I don't think that's our reality, because I don't believe that's how God works. At the very beginning of the Bible, God creates the world and calls it good, and I don't believe that God's mind has changed on that subject. It's not perfect, no more than we are as human beings. But the whole point of the Bible is the story of a God who is intimately and actively involved in human history and the world that God created to redeem and recreate it, to set things right. In fact, more to the point, Jesus called his disciples, his followers, to go, not to huddle, not to keep separate, not to discount the world, but to go live in the midst of it. You see, the thing is, we get confused. The world doesn't dictate the mission of the church. The world is the mission of the church. I think the current digital shift really is on the same level as that of the printing press, a shift that's bringing culture, ideas, and people closer together than ever before. I can only think of a handful of times when a shift like this has happened. The Pax Romana and its road system at the birth of Christianity. The Renaissance, when the church, of all things, became the patron and driving force of art, music, and creativity. The advent of the printing press and the free flow of ideas and mass print. Perhaps the development of early electronic communications, telegraph, radio, TV. I would even add the return of the World War II generation, where farm boys and city kids from an isolationist United States came back after experiencing not only the horrors of war, but the wonders and changes that come from long immersions in another culture and country. All these were moments of great fear for those who were on the sidelines, either by choice or circumstance. Because changes like this alter everyone around. It changes culture, and it changes the world around us permanently. I see that happening in the American church. You know, I live in a part of the country where one day I can be in a congregation less than 30 years old, in a building that looks like a Chipotle or a Starbucks. And look around, and what I'll see are people under the age of 45 with smartphones, iPads, digital displays, worship led by bands with music like I hear on the radio. It would be a mistake to say these churches are all about appearance. Because my experience has been that most churches who change their appearance to meet the world around them are also keenly active in following and serving like Jesus. They speak the language that is experiential, participatory, image-driven, and communal. Epic, as Len Sweet puts it. These are congregations that will survive for another generation, because they've placed themselves at the heart of the 21st century world. They have chosen to change in order to be missionaries. At the same time, I can drive 10 miles and find myself in churches that are still in the 1940s. Young people there are in their 50s. The majority of people on Sundays have gray hair and talk about how things used to be when the church was new. Green paint purchased in the 1960s covers cinder block basement walls, and aging hymnals sit well-worn in pew racks. These are congregations that don't have web pages and would sooner pick up the phone than figure out how to use Facebook for ministry. Now, it'd be a mistake to say that the aging appearance of the people in their buildings means these congregations are uncaring and don't follow Jesus. Most of these communities are rather remarkable places that have survived world wars, depressions, and political upheavals. They've been a sign of the love of Jesus, and I've served in one of those congregations, very much like that. They are, by and large, loving and caring people. But they've also chosen not to speak the language of the world. And sadly, most are now disconnected from the world Jesus sent us into. For far too many of these congregations, mission is to maintain until the last one is buried and they lock the doors. These are places where their kids and grandkids come back to visit, but they don't come back to live anymore. And so, sitting alone on corners or rising above cornfields, these congregations are quietly passing away. The world got to the point where it moved too fast and too far for them to keep up. And firmly set in the 20th century, most of these congregations will die in the next 20 years and vanish like bookstores. Most of you who listen to Wire of Jesus don't live in such places, open country or small towns where most of the people have vanished over the last 30 years. Gone to where the world takes them, into cities and suburbs. Most of us live there, in this crossroads where the revolution in Egypt is a reality at home or at work. And in our neighborhoods, established churches sit on suburban street corners next to Caribou Coffee. These are the places where on Sunday mornings, Gen Xers and millennials crowd restaurants and coffee bars, holding new iPads while boomers and older folks sit in neat rows listening to pipe organs and holding 30-year-old hymnals. One group is connected and part of the world. The other is disconnected and may as well be out in a cornfield. There's a gap between the two. A gap where God already is. And we, in many cases, have yet to figure out. What I see in Egypt may be the very thing that's happening in American churches. New congregations who have developed their culture and values in the last 30 years are largely stable, largely growing. Those that have been around for more than 50 years are either stagnant or mostly dying. No matter where they're located, city or country. Because they aren't changing to meet the world, to really go out into it. It's always kind of sad and funny at the same time when I hear the same story when I arrive in a new congregation, either as a new pastor or as a consultant. Conversation typically goes like this. Pastor, we've lost families to these new churches. We need to get them back. What are you going to do about it? So I ask, well, why did they leave? Well, they like the band worship. They have programs for their kids. And, they have a newer building. And, they've got, places and small groups where, the younger adults can serve. Now, when I say, you need to add those same things. You need to add new worship styles. You need to upgrade your building so it looks more like your home than the site of a garage sale. And let adults under the age of 50 serve in your leadership. Now, the response is typically no. Because for many of them, we want them to come back to be like us again, to listen to us again, do things our way and in our language. And the end result is a revolt. In Egypt, they've taken to the streets. What Mubarak has said is democracy is not democracy. And so they are demanding for real democracy, in which they have a place and a part. The most established Christian congregations in that type of revolt, younger generations walk away to places willing to speak their language, value freedom, and welcome creativity. That is part of their culture and their world. So it's not surprising to see many congregations anymore adopting the name Crossroads, because that speaks exactly where they're at. And also points to where many congregations are not. I'm rambling, but I wanted to get a podcast out and kind of put some of these thoughts down. And I hope you're kind of following where I've been going with this. Bookstore, social networking, Egypt, and the mainline church, I think they really are in all the same place. Because in the end, it's all the same people struggling with all the same issues. It's no longer a Middle Eastern versus Western types of values and things. This digital world is creating a more unified foundation for us to live as human beings. The part that gives me hope in all this is that while it's still the same people, it's also the same God. While I miss bookstores, I pray that we don't let their demise be an end to knowledge and creativity. I pray for Egypt and that in their revolution, there is a birth of a real democracy. I pray for the generations in my congregation and our community that social networking and this new way of speaking and connecting is not the enemy, but it's something that takes us back out into the world rather than being separate from it. And I pray for the mainline church, like my tribe, the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America, where the average age of a Sunday morning worshiper is 57. I pray we don't end up as empty museums out in the cornfields or on suburban street corners, but that we become communities of all generations following Jesus that are truly connected, personal, and relevant. Well, that's it for Wired Jesus 57, so thanks to the snowstorm for keeping me home for some forced free time. I still have a couple partial scripts in the bin, so I'll keep working on those. I'm also trying to use the blog more. linking articles via Share This directly to it, which has been a nice addition, as well as using Facebook and Twitter. In fact, I've been having increasing fun with Twitter since I started using Hootsuite. If you haven't tried it, I prefer it far and above over TweetDeck. It's really taken me from looking at Twitter as an annoying source of bumper sticker wisdom into a real leadership tool that I use every day. So if you haven't found me on Facebook or on Twitter, just do a Wired Jesus search on either one and I'll pop right up. Well, the snow is still coming down and my driveway has drifted over again. So I think I'll call it a day and maybe boot up a game of Mass Effect or Bioshock 2. So, until the next podcast, thanks for listening and see you out there on the road.
What if God was one of us? Just a slot like one of us. Blue, 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 blue. Yeah, blah, blee, blee, blee. Well done. Very good.
Dr. Evil, that was fantastic.
Thank you, number two.
I wrote that.
Yeah.